Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for January 16th, 2013. I am so happy that you are here today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. Well, today on the podcast, you know, I had it all set up. I knew what I wanted to talk about. I was going to talk about habits and how we just fall out of them, or routines, exercise, anything that we want to do, and why it is so hard to maintain those habits, even if they're good for us. And I plan to talk about that on a later podcast, but I had something happen today in a session, and it was so profound, and it really affected me. I really wanted to share it with you because it is the essence of what I am trying to accomplish here on The Healthy Mind. I want to talk about depression, emotional illness, I guess, in general, and how, gosh, people feel that they might be crazy because they have depression or anxiety or bipolar. But you're not crazy, okay? You're human, okay? You're not crazy. You're simply human. And I'm going to explain that. I want to talk about emotional illness, the state of the art of it, where we stand today in understanding what this is, and how even today in 2013, the stigma that is out there in the way that people understand depression or anxiety, and this particular session that I had really kind of crystallized that, and I think you're really going to take a lot away from this. So we're going to be talking about emotional illness, stigma, and why that can get in the way of people getting help, not only for their emotional illness, but the ramifications that that has on our physical well-being today on The Healthy Mind. Now, in the news, the second half, I'm going to keep a theme here of the role of emotions and the physical, some incredible, incredible studies that came out just in the last week, the link between depression and heart attacks, and the link between depression and stroke. So I want to focus on the mind-body connection today and really how stigma can get in the way and can really, really harm an individual or have a huge impact on their reluctance or their hesitancy or their willingness to get help. So that's what we're going to talk about today on The Healthy Mind. We're going to do some headlines. We have got ourselves a jam-packed, but a really, really powerful podcast. So I'm really happy that you are here. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to sign up for the monthly newsletter. You can sign up for it right there on the homepage at thehealthymind.com. So, let's begin. Okay, so let me just set this up for you in terms of what was going on in my session and where this really inspired me to just do an about face on the theme of today's podcast. So I was seeing an individual, and her name is Mary, not her real name, but let's just say it is. And she has struggled with depression for the better part of her life, depression and anxiety. And recently, with some stressors at work, it really got bad, really bad. And it got to the point where she needed to pull away from work. And she's not working right now. And she hasn't for the last month or so. Now, this was a very, very high executive level job that she was performing, managing quite a few people. But we're going to take it slow, and I want to just make sure that she gets back either to that job or to whatever job she wants as we take care of her depression. But as we started talking about the holidays, she relayed to me a discussion that she had with a relative. And to me, it really highlighted, I think, the biggest struggle, at least for me, that I face in my career or in my professional life. It isn't figuring out the best approach or the best treatment for an individual, a patient. It really isn't. The hardest thing throughout my career has been making people feel completely comfortable about their depression or their anxiety or their bipolar, whatever it may be. Now, you may be saying, well, what does that mean, make them feel comfortable about that? Well, I mean making them comfortable so that they don't feel like they're crazy just because they're diagnosed with depression or bipolar or anxiety, whatever it may be, any emotional disorder. And secondly, that the medications or whatever treatment we decide to do is important, it is meaningful, it's necessary, that they don't feel, gosh, it's a crutch, I'm weak, I can't handle things. That's the hardest thing, because there's a double standard in medicine today, particularly when it comes to emotional illnesses. And it's gotten better, don't get me wrong, but still in 2013, it is still a problem. And Mary's experience really highlights this, and it really reflects everything that I am hoping to accomplish here on The Healthy Mind. So, what happened? She was at Christmas with her family, and she started talking to her sister. And her sister knew that she had been struggling with depression. She knows that she's had a history of depression. Now, the important thing here to understand is that her sister is a practicing physician, primary care doctor, I believe an internal medicine physician. I'm not coming down on primary care doctors when I talk about her. But she became very upset with her sister because of the direction that she took in the discussion. And the essence of it was that as they were talking about how Mary's been doing over the last month or so, how difficult it's been, and she's starting to turn it around now. We've done medications and therapy, and she's starting to turn it around. But her sister had said, you don't let the depression and anxiety get the best of you. You don't need medications. You just need to not let it bother you. And that is how the depression will go away. Ladies and gentlemen, this lady has struggled with depression for the better part of her life. Now, she hasn't been depressed her entire life. In fact, a large part of her life has not been in depression. Why? Because she's been treated for her depression. Before she started getting treatment, she had tried everything, everything. Exercise, diet, meditation, yoga, whatever it might have been. And while she might have felt better for a period of time, there was still this anxiety and depression that got the best of her until she went and sought help for it. And a combination of specific therapy and medications changed it for her. Now, part of the reason, just like any other medical issue, that this particular period of depression came was that it was an unbelievably unique stress, negative stress at work during the winter time when it's been very difficult for her anyway. And as depression ebbs and flows, it did get the best of her. But we are on track again, and she's getting better because of the treatment. But she was very upset by her sister almost dismissing it and saying something like that. Just pull up your bootstraps. Don't think about your depression. Don't let it get to you. And this is where I want to go today because it brings up a very important point. There's a double standard here when we're talking about emotional disorders and psychiatric illness. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, a lot of people have a hard time in fully feeling comfortable, and it may be you as well, fully feeling comfortable that psychiatric disorders are quote-unquote medical disorders. And believe me, I have read the anti-psychiatry stuff as well, and I understand where people are coming from. Psychiatry hasn't done a great job as well over the years, and we're still licking our wounds from a legacy early on where it wasn't the best science. Let's leave it at that. But the work that's been done, particularly over the last 20 or 30 years, and when I'm talking about work and research, I don't mean just medications. No. And even if we talk about medications, and you know this podcast doesn't focus on medication treatment, but the medications are simply a part of the treatment. They should never be seen as the entire part of the treatment. But I started talking to Mary, and I said, well, okay, she said that to you, that you just need to pull up your bootstraps and not think about it, and that will get better. And I asked her, what if you would have said, Mary, to her, well, why don't you tell your diabetic patients to do that, or your hypertension patients? You know, when they come in, they've got high blood pressure, or they've got diabetes, and, you know, you can look them straight in the face and say, you know what? You don't need insulin. You don't need insulin. You simply just need to pull your bootstraps up and not think about your diabetes or not think about your hypertension, and it'll go away. It won't bother you. And of course, as most people do, she smiled, kind of smirked. And, you know, that is the irony. That is the double standard of emotional illness. Now, we're not at a perfect scientific consensus on why emotional illness happens and how do we perfectly treat it. But I ask you to consider, where is it a lock in any other medical disorder about how to treat it to the point where we cure something, right? The largest health issues in this country, hypertension and diabetes, we know how to treat them. Yes, we do. There are a slew of antihypertensive meds for blood pressure. There are various types of medications, including insulin, that can control your blood sugar. But why does it happen? Why does high blood pressure happen? Why does diabetes happen? Why? Not in terms of how do we treat it, but why does it occur? And really, if you look at hypertension, the large majority, 95% of hypertension, is essential hypertension, meaning it is. It's just there. We don't know why it happens. We know there's a family history, and we know the signs that are there, and we treat it. Calcium channel blockers, beta blockers, diuretics, all these different types of meds that will lower blood pressure. Same with diabetes. There's a large family history or a genetic component to that, and it goes down the generations. But why does it happen? Why do people get diabetes? Not the type that comes on type 2, if you will, because of poor diet and no exercise, but primary diabetes, diabetes type 1, where you have to take insulin. Why does it happen? And the answer is, really, we don't know. At least I'm not aware that anybody knows why exactly it happens. So now we come to the emotional disorders, depression, anxiety, bipolar. Pick whatever you want. What are the facts here? Well, we know that there is a genetic component to emotional illness. It runs in families. If there is a family history, you have a greater likelihood of being affected. Maybe not exactly by the same disorder. Family history of depression doesn't necessarily mean you'll exactly get depression. It increases your risk that you will, just like cardiac disease, just like hypertension, just like diabetes. If there's a family history of it, you have to be extra careful because you've got a greater likelihood that you can get that illness. What else? Why does it happen? Well, I don't know. We don't know. The vast majority, why is this occurring? Depression, anxiety, bipolar. There's a ton of theories, and we've talked about some of them here. We've talked about the role of inflammation. We've talked about the role of various nutritional deficiencies. We've talked about the role of stress, DNA changes, chromosome findings, abnormalities in the DNA that might explain it, or changes in the way that our brain is structured or the way that it functions, is trying to understand why some people get depressed. But we don't know. But what do we know? We know, and at least have a very good algorithm of how to treat these emotional disorders, no matter what they may be. Treat them with medication, treat them with psychotherapy, treat them with various forms of lifestyle management, diet, nutrition. We know how to do it. And for most people, they will respond. Now, let me be clear here again. What I'm not saying is the only treatment for depression, the only one, is medications. But I'm talking about treatment. And the example that I've given before on the show, and it's really worth repeating again, is the comparison to either diabetes or hypertension. It is totally reasonable that a person could be struggling with high blood pressure or diabetes, but they've got a poor lifestyle. And in being able to make the changes that they need in their lifestyle, the illness goes away. I've seen it happen. People who have been overweight by 50 or 100 pounds, they are dedicated, committed, and lose that weight, and their hypertension goes away. Their sugar normalizes. Their sleep apnea goes away. The behaviors change, and by changing their behavior and their lifestyle, their illnesses go away. Well, this can happen in depression as well. Could be in therapy, could be the self-help work that you do, recognizing the patterns that may lead to anxiety or depression. And like the person who diets to get rid of their obesity or high blood pressure, you begin to feel better emotionally. That is totally reasonable. But it is also true that someone could be doing everything absolutely right. They could be a marathon runner, right? Totally rail thin, exercising, eating right. They're doing it all by the book. You look at their blood work and it is picture perfect. But they go in and see their doctor. They've got high blood pressure. Or they get the blood work and their sugar is high. They've got diabetes. Now, what's happening there? And that part there is that biological component, the part that we're not sure of. Why does this happen? Because no one can really say why that happens in the person who's doing everything right. It just is. It just is. But we know how to treat it. We know how to treat it. And there are many, many treatments for high blood pressure and diabetes. Now, someone could be doing everything right, and I see these individuals. They've done everything right. They manage their stress. They haven't had difficulties or traumas in their life to explain it, but they have depression. They have anxiety. They're not doing things wrong. But what's missing is the biological part of that. And that's the role of the medications. They should never be seen as the whole. It's the biggest mistake anyone could make as a treater, but certainly as a patient as well. We cannot assume that the meds will do everything, or simply put it on a disorder that then dismisses the active part that you have to take in your health. But in the same way, we can't just throw away the medications completely, as if it's some conspiracy by the big drug companies, or that they don't help. Because it isn't just about feeling better from these emotional illnesses. And that's what we'll talk a little bit about here in the news in just a little bit. But I have talked about it over and over and over because it is real. Having depression or anxiety in your life, clinical depression, an emotional illness, if you will, greatly increases the risk of physical problems that an individual will have in their life if it's not treated. We've talked about it over and over, but this is the most important part to consider for individuals that say, well, why should I get treatment? I'm not crazy. I don't really need to take this. So what? People get depressed. People are anxious. I don't need meds. I don't need a crutch. But we know big studies, and we've talked about them, studies that show the risk of cardiac disease, of respiratory disease, of stroke, of arthritis, of diabetes, the disease burden that is multiplied because someone is struggling from emotional illness is huge. It's indisputable. So I tell people, look, even if you aren't comfortable completely with the fact that you need this to feel better emotionally, I am telling you, we know that these emotional illnesses impact our physical well-being. I don't want to scare people. I don't want to discourage them. I don't want them to feel that they're going to drop dead tomorrow of a heart attack because they didn't treat their depression. But there are studies, and good ones, large ones, that show that your risk of death of all causes, not just a particular type, whether it's cardiac disease, stroke, whatever it may be, is increased significantly if you carry a diagnosis of depression and it's not treated. I mean, that's just real. There's no way around that. Now, that isn't to say that, well, the only answer then, Peter, as you're telling me, is medication. Well, of course you're going to say it's medication because that's what you do for a living. Well, partly, yes, but because they help. And that's the big part here. The stigma is affecting people's lives significantly because we're still worried about the perception of being labeled crazy because you're getting treatment for emotional illnesses. Never mind that there has been decades of research and study that has looked at the medical consequences of depression. The stigma, what Mary went through with her sister, a physician, still shows where we are at and how far we haven't come. But you're not crazy because you have depression or anxiety. You're human. And these psychological issues, these emotional issues, disorders, have biological and psychological ramifications. And the interventions for them are both biological and psychological, but so is hypertension, diabetes, and the rest. We see the consequences of not addressing mental health issues everywhere in our society. The risks of falling prey to the stigma, whether it's our veterans that are dying of suicide, they're killing themselves, whether it is these tragic and terrible, terrible shootings that are happening, these mass shootings, or the countless suffering of individuals in their own battle to struggle with maintaining their emotions, their dignity, and their physical well-being. There's no time for stigma. There just isn't. Now, having said that, this doesn't mean that people shouldn't be critical or have no right to be critical of psychiatry. I don't walk away from that. I welcome it. A lot has been learned by those who have been critical of psychiatry. A lot has changed in the profession because of people who stand up and say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, or this isn't right. I mean, my goodness, just last week a study had come out that had looked at the way that nerves talk to each other in the brain. The basic, I'm not talking about some newfangled type of understanding, the basic understanding of the way nerves talk to each other, one neuron to another, sending the electrical signal from one to the next, probably doesn't exist that way in the brain at all. We have to be willing to look and say at any point, if the data comes out that something isn't working or isn't true, we have to honor that and look at it. So to me, when someone is anti-psychiatry or is critical of psychiatry, as long as it's respectful and we're talking, my mind isn't closed. You can learn from opposing opinions. You can learn from each other. And I have. Psychiatry, I hope, has as well. But in that same spirit, we have to look at the growing data that suggests a biological basis to these emotional illnesses. Not only that, but that the consequences aren't just on one's emotional quality of life, but it has huge implications on the physical. Key issues that this country is facing: hypertension, blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, inflammatory disorders. Stigma can literally kill really can. People do not get treatment for this because of what it means. And that doesn't happen in almost any other disorder. So that at least is my motivation in my small, infinitely small way of what I hope to achieve with the Healthy Mind, the website and the podcast, is to talk about it, is to talk about these issues and bring them to a human level that respects the fact that these disorders are real. There are different ways to treat them. One way is medication. But not treating them doesn't just affect emotions, but it can affect the physical. And the folks that come in, this is the great paradox. And this is why I say, never doubt how truly powerful you are. Because people come in, or colleagues or friends will say, how do you do it? How do you do it, Peter? Listening to these folks talk about their depression, how do you do it? How does it not exhaust you? And I mean it honestly. One way to look at it is just being bombarded by negativity. But what I see are people who have carved out a life and have figured out how to live despite the depression and the anxiety. It's an albatross on them. They're carrying all of that and still moving down the road of their life. I see the strength. That's what's real. That's what's real, and it's motivating, and it's inspiring. So there was a lot that came out of Mary's session, as you can understand, at least what was fluttering around in my mind. And I really think of all the subjects that I talk about, this perhaps is the core of what fuels me, not only in doing the Healthy Mind, but in my practice. How do we legitimately and honestly relay what these emotional disorders are without people feeling that they are crazy, insane, need a crutch of medications, can't handle things on their own, are of weak character, are not strong? How do we make them not think that is what it means to get treated and make them feel a little bit more comfortable? A little bit more comfortable because of the huge ramifications that are there, not just emotional, but physical. I haven't figured it out yet. That is the biggest challenge that I face day in and day out. But most people get better. They really, really do. They do it. You can do it because you're that powerful. It is absolutely true. Only self-doubt, only fear, only anxiety prevents you from realizing that. And I don't mean for that to sound like a self-help statement, because it is absolutely true. It's absolutely true. You are so, so powerful. You really, really are. And once you begin to see that, you are walking straight down that path, right down that road to the Healthy Mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, there were some amazing new studies that were out, and I want to continue along this theme of the mind-body connection. The fact that our emotions and making sure that we're taking care of our emotional well-being isn't just for the sake of feeling happy, but that it has huge implications as it relates to our physical well-being. Now, the first study was out of the University of Southern California, and what these particular researchers found was that there was a very, very high risk of death after a stroke if you were depressed. What the researchers had found was that people who are depressed after a stroke have 3 times the risk of dying early and 4 times the risk of death from another stroke compared to those individuals who have had a stroke but haven't been depressed. Okay? These are all folks who have had strokes, but the different variable here is being depressed. And this is what they did. They followed over 10,000 people between the ages of 25 and 74 for 21 years. And they controlled out for all of the other variables, age, your sex, socioeconomic factors, and the like, and they found that the risk was significantly higher, 3 times greater risk that you will die after having a stroke if you carry a diagnosis of depression. This is what I'm talking about, okay? We are talking about the effect of emotional disorders and the need to treat them not for emotional reasons, but that these are medical issues that affect us physically. And in this case, with regards to how we may do after a stroke. Now, another recent study had looked at, this was a European study, that looked at the effect of having depression and outcomes after heart attacks. And what the researchers found in this study was that survivors of heart attacks are 3 times more likely to develop depression during the first 6 months after their heart attack than people that did not have heart disease. And if this was left untreated, it led to a worse prognosis. This is what the researchers found. According to Professor Klaus Vogel from the University of Luxembourg, quote, "The causes for this high prevalence of depression after heart attacks are still unclear." And it really is an interesting thing. What you are seeing is this relationship with the heart and depression, both in terms of an increased risk of cardiovascular events in those people that have depression, but also in the reverse, those that have had a significant heart issue have a greater risk of being depressed, and then that increases their risk of another cardiac event. And really, these two recent news stories mirror many stories that have come out, studies that have come out that show this mind-body connection. That's why I say it is very hard to dispute some of the findings that are here. The fact that our emotions will impact our physical well-being, whether it's cardiovascular disease, infection, immunity, inflammation, chronic pain that I've talked about many times here. But stigma still gets in the way and prevents people from getting the adequate treatment that they need. Now, when I say adequate treatment, I don't mean that you've got to rush to the psychiatrist and get on an SSRI or some kind of antidepressant. But in the same way, we cannot assume that these aren't diseases that have medical consequences. We have to be able to reconcile that. And I will continue to discuss this on The Healthy Mind. There is an urgency to make sure that we are with respect and properly, authentically treating these emotional disorders, not just so that people can be happy, but because these emotional disorders make changes, cause changes in our physical well-being, and it increases our risk of illness and mortality because we don't treat our underlying mood and emotional problems. It is so, so important. And if there is nothing that anyone ever takes away from The Healthy Mind, is to please understand this mind-body relationship, research it, talk about it with each other, talk to family members, talk to your physicians about it, because there are huge implications. It really is a matter of health and well-being for all of us. And I think that that is incredibly important. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, wow, it was one of those weeks where I didn't even know how to pick which stories to pick. They were all so important. But the first headline, strawberries and blueberries may cut heart attack risk in women. Women who ate at least 3 servings of blueberries and strawberries per week had fewer heart attacks. Blueberries and strawberries contain high levels of compounds that have cardiovascular benefits. The next headline, childhood trauma leaves its mark on the brain. Fascinating new study, again, along this mind-body connection. European scientists find evidence that psychological wounds inflicted when we are young leave lasting biological traces and a predisposition towards violence later in life. And finally, I love this, and I'll probably do a story on this as well. The headline, Facebook posts are not easily forgotten. Facebook posts resonate significantly more with human nature than books or even faces, according to a new study from the University of California, San Diego. The difference in memory between these microblogs and actual published words from a page is as striking as the difference in memory between amnesiacs and healthy controls. Be careful is the lesson from that story. Be careful what you post because we don't forget. And as always, the internet never forgets. Be careful, please. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget to sign up for the absolutely free monthly newsletter. You can do so right there on the homepage. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything, I want to hear from you. You can email me at any time. The email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for The Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.